Okay, welcome to Sick Fish, Zuko Heart's Main Other True Facts, the official podcast of Flaming Knives. I'm Rolls, also known as Rolls everywhere on the internet.
I'm Shizuma, also known as Shizuma's Lover.
I'm Kimba, known as Kimba, I think.
I'm Eliwell Goose. Yeah, I just cause trouble mostly.
Really?
Yeah.
So, this week we're gonna talk about The Awakening and The Headband, have a little discussion about those episodes. For our little getting into character section, we're going to specifically talk about Aang, everybody's favorite avatar. And we're gonna have some ficrecs for you, and then Shizuma's gonna announce a little contest that people might wanna enter, hopefully. So, we're gonna get started, guys, with The Awakening, the long, long, long awaited season 3 premiere.
One cannot emphasize that enough, actually.
Aang, you're awake!
Are you sure? I feel like I'm dreaming.
You're not dreaming. You're finally awake.
So
long. No.
The thing that first stood out to me so much on watching The Awakening was how they amped up the Aang-viciousness of the Aang-Zuko parallels to like 9,000. And they were already usually pretty super obvious. So The fact that they kind of just took it to a completely new level of, yes, guys, they are like the two sides of the same coin, you know, destiny.
They really wanted to make sure you were paying attention, apparently.
Yes. Or even if you weren't paying attention, they wanted to be sure that you understood.
All those people that seriously, you know, weren't really watching the first couple seasons and thought, hey, I guess I'll start randomly watching this show.
Yeah.
Characters I've never heard of. They wanted you to make sure. They wanted to make sure that you knew that Zuko and Aang, they have some shit. Some shit that they're going to have to work out.
Yes.
Possibly in conjunction with each other.
Yeah, that was great. I especially like the first transition after Aang wakes up and like he's on the ship and they pan out from showing the ship that he's on, and of course it changes into Zuko's ship, and I'm like,
I didn't get it at first. Isn't that sad? I didn't get it at first. I'm like, what's going on? Like,
That's because you were too entranced with the narrative to notice.
Actually, I was sitting on a balance ball in the middle, like 4 inches away from my TV, because I was so excited about
that's
it.
Really
that might have had something to do with it, some eye strain issues.
That's awesome.
Well, that's how excited I was.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable, because it's 10 months.
Yes, too long.
And you know, you were that close, maybe you like didn't notice that the ships had changed. You know, anything's possible. Hey, it happens.
Yep.
But yeah, I love that. And also of particular interest to me in the main plot of the episode, because there were lots of plots happening in that episode. Also of particular interest to me was Aang's discussion with Roku when he has his whole I'm gonna run off and fight the Fire Lord now thing that he had to do. His whole discussion with Roku, and Roku was like, okay, this is actually my fault. So yeah, you're gonna have to fix it, but understand this is my fault. Everybody makes mistakes. And I really like that Roku took responsibility for that, because, you know, the whole idea of the Avatar is that this is supposed to be his thing that he's supposed to do. He's supposed to make sure that things like this don't happen. And you know, and just because so much of what happened with the Fire Nation and how they even got to that point, you know, by the point in time that, you know, that they killed all the air nomads and everything, you would think would be things that Roku, you know, should have done something about.
Right.
I really liked the acknowledgement of that.
Yeah, they wouldn't. Of course, it isn't until later that we get further context for it, but it's amazing how much that you really, I mean, it meant that when that episode came up, it really just felt like an explanation. It didn't feel like, oh, this big revelation. It was like, oh, okay, so now I understand what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they handled that tease really well. Like, I didn't come out of that episode being like, really, Roku? Seriously? I was like, oh, okay.
Like, tell me more about that. I need more explanation. But yeah, it wasn't needed, but it's amazing that we get it, and it's so vital to the story and Zuko's side of the story too.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to say that. I have to do my thing where I talk about Zuko for a minute.
Feel free.
I know. It's really sad. I mean, the thing about that episode that really kills me, in addition to like the blatant Aang parallels, it was really all about like ridiculous Zuko empathy. Like, I really feel like there's so much stuff that goes on with this character throughout the entire show where like really horrible, traumatic things are constantly happening to him. But he's so internal that I think it's really easy as a viewer to not really understand like what it would actually be like to be him. But something about the way that they blocked that episode, like they really took time to show his facial expressions, like they took time to show things like him anticipating seeing his father for the first time in, what was it, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
And you really get this very visceral sense of like how ridiculously terrified he is about this entire thing. Like the last 3 years of his life have been building up to this moment, and he's about to go talk to his dad, having not actually accomplished the thing he was supposed to accomplish. And I think people forget that until he actually went in there and talked to Ozai, as far as he was concerned, he didn't think, you know, he was a deep shit.
He had still failed. as far as
he had failed hardcore. I mean, not only that his sister had to come and take care of everything for him, but, you know, he didn't have the Avatar. He's not in his own head entirely sure the Avatar is dead, whatever he says to anybody. I mean, it's really clear that that's going on with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, oh, like, I'm sure he was expecting to go in there and have his dad be like, so, Azula kicked your ass again, and then she took care of your business. That's real manly. Thanks, Zuko. Why don't you go lick my shoes for a few hours? You know, like, I don't really think he was expecting the reception that he got, and like the shock on his face, and like the subtlety of the animation was just incredible. Like throughout the entire episode, but especially pretty much everything relating to Zuko, stuff that's going on in his face, because he says only about 20% of what's going on in his head at any given time, if that.
Maybe less on occasion.
Probably. It depends on whether or not he's talking to Mei.
Yeah. Right. Or Iroh on some occasions.
He tends to, when talking to like Mei or Iroh, he tends to actually articulate some things, you know?
Yeah, he tries to express his feelings. He has a lot of feelings.
He does. They get all over everything all the time.
I know.
It's hard for him to...
Except that usually they just sort of explode in a completely inarticulate, explodey way.
Yes.
Not in a let me tell you something kind of way. But anyway, his face told us all we needed to know in this episode. And
it's usually a get out of my face or I'll burn you kind of way.
Yeah, and I spent pretty much the entirety of that scene with his dad clinging to the person sitting next to me. Like a clinking thing. As my heart broke into a million teeny weeny little pieces.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But and also what you mentioned about the subtlety of the animation, which is something that I love about Avatar. We will talk about... I feel as though I should talk about another instance of animation subtlety that is a great, great joy to me, is the scene with Mei on the boat, which is so awesome. I love it.
The launching of the season 3 Mako.
Yes, so great. And see, what I love about that scene is, and Allie like says this all the time, and I agree completely with her, is that so much of Mei Zuko is about things that aren't actually said, you know?
Which makes it frustrating as somebody who's interested in the ship to try to talk to other people about it, because it's like, I just don't get it. And it's like, okay. Anyway, roles continue. We'll get back to that.
But yeah, I love that scene because it's so great because he's just standing out there and you know Zuko. By this point in time, you know Zuko. You understand that he has probably been doing this same 1,000-yard stare all the time, the whole time they've been coming back from the Fire Nation, however many weeks it's been, and he stands out there in the cold on the deck, staring off. Wondering what's going to happen.
Oh, he'd go.
What's going to happen?
Wondering what's changed and if he's changed.
Yeah, you know, and you can tell, you know, he's like talked about this to Mei like a billion times, and she's just kind of like,
some poetry about how the grayness in his soul is like the gray of the ocean.
Yeah. And so I just love that she comes out there and she's just kind of like, yeah, you know, oh, aren't you cold? What's going on? What's up, baby? And just kind of, that's how she's like. And then he just goes off on this whole thing. And I love like watching her expression in the background because it's like this little smile to like, oh, here he goes with this again.
Yeah. Her expressions are amazing.
They're great.
In that scene. Well, both of theirs are really like so much of it is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned earlier, Rawls, some other time about Giancarlo's storyboards that he put up on DeviantArt and how it totally vindicated everyone's thoughts that there was so much more to that scene than what they were just saying.
Yeah, because, you know, in the storyboards, he actually sort of outlines, in this pen, you know, this frame, we hold this, you know, expression for X amount of frames and that sort of thing. And, you know, their eyes meet, etc. And both of their expressions are really great. And, you know, I love that she like makes a joke and then, you know, he like gets a little annoyed and she's like, and then, you know, she just kind of, and she goes to comfort him. And it's really great. And I also love the little split second moment after they kiss and they're like staring into each other's eyes and she's smiling. Then he calms down a little bit.
Just a bit.
She goes about a percent. Just a bit, because, you know, he's Zuko. He's still going to be acting crazy. But I love that. And I love...
The scene isn't even what they're saying. It's the fact that he's saying anything at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's only two people that he ever really has a real conversation with. Like, and then one time he talked to Katara because he was sitting in a cave and was having a really bad day.
Yeah.
And actually, I love the scene when he talks to Katara. I love that whole thing because it just reminded me so much of in Siege of the North. And like, on the commentary for that, they talked about how Zuko kind of goes off in this whole thing, sort of spilling his gut while he's in this cave with like unconscious Aang.
Because
right.
I know.
Right.
I love that.
I love it. And they're like, yeah, you know, Zuko, a lot of times, you know, he's really only saying these things because he just kind of assumes no one's really listening.
Yeah.
And so he's like, yeah, I'll just get this off my chest. And so I really like that they kind of, and of course it was really necessary for that episode.
Right.
That we understand that he's
Thank you. Right. And also to do with the awakening, we find out in the awakening that there was another purpose for that scene, which was he needed to know about the spirit water to have suspicion about Aang being alive.
I'm so glad that they brought that back in that way. I mean, it just shows how dense this, how densely the thing is written.
Yes, everything has purpose, but
And speaking of the of suspicions about the Avatar being alive, Allie got to talk about Zuko a little bit. I just have to say about Azula, I just have to say that I love her so hard. It hurts sometimes how much I love her. And she was amazing in this episode. As she always is.
Yeah, Azula is just, you know, sometimes I just sit around and wish that like every villain ever could be like Azula.
Sociopathic and gorgeous and socially awkward and
she's just so great. I love it.
Just smarter than everyone and
kind of scary.
Well, that's part of it, you know. You have to be a little bit scary, or a lot scary. And I remember I've said many a time that like my favorite thing about like the whole final thing where she sort of sets Zuko up to get into trouble, you know, if Aang turns out to be alive. My favorite thing about that whole thing is that when he's like, you know, why did you do it? And she's like, you have to be more specific. Because she keeps a list.
What else is she planning?
Keeps a list of evil shit.
Exactly.
It's a really long list. And I'm sure that there's all kinds of like cross-referencing and
because she's so organized, she has to be perfect always.
I'm sure there's lots of little flags, you know, like color-coded system about which person is being tormented by. I'm sure Suki has a whole folder at this point. I know.
Kimba, cover your ears, Kimba.
I'm sorry. Anyway,
yes,
Scylla was awesome.
My inner
fan
girl cry.
Whatever.
She'll be fine.
No, I mean, she has a whole folder about how she's given Suki candy and hugs and...
also flowers and chocolate.
Not torturing her at all for information and breaking her spirit.
No, because that would be evil.
Right.
But yeah. That is all I have on The Awakening. Anybody else? Any last thoughts on that?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the only other thing about The Awakening, and I know you guys have all listened to me talk about this before, so I apologize, but just the fact that The Awakening was sort of a weird beginning for the season because it was so incredibly dense. Like, it was just an unbelievable amount of plot information crammed into a very small space. And on top of that, still managed to have a bunch of, like, kind of weird, low-key little character moments. And then it was, like, insane plot exposition. And then a few little character moments, and like the seesawing between them was kind of exhausting that first time around.
It made my brain hurt.
I know, and it really wasn't until I'd watched it like two or three times that I really started to process it beyond that kind of being overwhelmed. And I think that it was, I think that the headband, moving into the next thing, was a really good way to follow it up. Because it was so laid back by comparison. It had a very simple story it was telling. It had plenty of time to just kind of hang out with various people having picnics. And I think we needed that after like the giant jackhammer of plot exposition that was The Awakening. That is all I've said.
Absolutely.
Yes. The headband. I love the headband so much. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite, not just of season 3, but like one of my absolute favorite Avatar episodes, period. Mostly because it's just so funny. I love how funny it is. And, you know, I feel like I've actually mentioned this somewhere recently that I feel like I personally have an extra special appreciation for Avatar's especially funny episodes because I can be kind of difficult when it comes to humor. And so things that actually make me literally laugh out loud, like Avatar really constantly does, I cherish them extra special because, not that much stuff that's intentionally meant to be funny makes me actually laugh a lot about it.
Yeah, there were so many ridiculous things in this episode.
I was just saying, Avatar's actually funny. Like,
yeah, it actually is.
Right.
Really consistently, it's amazing.
Yeah, I do find it amazing. That, you know, that's part of why, because so much stuff is not consistently funny.
If at all.
If at all, seriously. And so the fact that they managed to make, you know, this show that is all these other wonderful things as well as being consistently, you know, genuinely comedic is just amazing to me. And it's also extra amazing to me because I always feel like, you know, just from my own creative point of view, I find comedy completely impossible to write.
Yeah. What I love about the comedy in Avatar is that it's such a heavy show. I mean, there's so many really mature themes and so many, you know, there's tragedy. There's like a really, really dense storyline that needs to be gotten through, but it's not afraid to be silly and not, like, not take itself too seriously all the time. And in the headband, there were so many like classic Avatar silly moments, like Yeah. The introduction of Wang Fire and the beard.
Oh my God.
Katara being pregnant and Aang's mother. And like, it was just, and that kid, the Anji's boyfriend, I always forget his name.
Hide.
Yeah. Like the way he was crying and impersonating the headmaster guy and just. Fantastic. So much fantasticness.
Stuff, yeah. And then there's just the general hilarity, and of course it's really obvious, of secret dance party.
Yes.
The Footloose episode of Avatar.
The Footloose episode, yeah.
Yeah.
Secret dance.
Secret dance party. But yeah, I love that episode. I especially love all the little Fire Nation kids, because they were adorable.
Yes.
And I love everything in the classrooms. And it's at the school, I love everything that was happening at the school. Not least because people like to talk about the colonies.
Oh my God. The and colonies. Seriously, by the way, some of the most brilliantly, subtly, perfectly done exposition in like the entire show.
Yes.
Like so much incidental world building information that they clearly wanted us to know. And they actually managed to work it in this completely organic, funny, interesting way. And that is really, really hard to do. Like everything from like the nature of Fire Nation propaganda regarding the Air Nomads to, you know, the fact, oh my God, colonies. Yay.
Colonies.
Like, oh my good colonies. But
the colonies excite me way too much.
Wow. That's because they're awesome.
It is. It's also because I used to like always sit around and like draft out long ridiculous meta about like the extent to which the Fire Nation has pushed into the Earth Kingdom and settled in places and like, and I would compare like this one port that seemed to be neutral and the Fire Nation could come here and everybody else could come here too, as compared to this, you know, Haru's town, and you know, they seem to actually be violently occupied, as compared to the town from the Deserter where this seems to be fully culturally Fire Nation, and oh, you know, and I might have, you know, tried to figure these things out on a map, maybe.
Yeah, I do remember sitting there with a map with you at one point and talking.
It could have happened.
Because I love you guys so much.
Well, I was writing a story at the time, and I was like, well, what do we know about the Fire Nation colonies? And we seriously sat there and talked about it for like an hour.
But
like, is this realistic? Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, personally, I feel that in the North, and my God, I'm like, oh my God, awesome.
That's fabulous. Well, it's worth talking about.
It is. I find it interesting anyway.
Oh, yes. And all the propaganda and the giant statue of Ozai in the courtyard of the school and the pledge that they said.
I love the pledge.
That pledge was so creepy.
About giving up their lives and, you know, using their minds to better their country and their hands to fight for the Fire Lord. Yeah, it's creepy.
Feet,
it's children.
They will continue the march of civilization. Thank you very much.
Oh, God.
I love it.
Chilling.
I love it.
So great.
But that's like... But I always love that kind of stuff, so. Mm-hmm. I'm all about, you know, imperialist nations and indoctrination and propaganda. Mm-hmm.
Also, forget royal families.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know about that. Okay, yeah. I am obsessed with royal families and nobility and aristocracy in general. And this is, like, a thing with me pretty much universally, so. There's a reason why I obsess over the Fire Nation.
Oh man.
And I'm gonna totally steal a little bit from Allie's book here. I'm gonna talk about Zuko now.
Okay.
And when I was thinking about Zuko, what stood out to me the most about Zuko in this episode is like this just really great job that he was doing of completely compartmentalizing his life.
Yes.
At that point in time, I love it. And it was something that I really.
It's so unhealthy.
It is. And that's why I love it so much, because
I know.
Screwed up things, I guess. It was really great because my friend and I, we used to always talk, because I got her to watch the show and I sort of watched it all through again with her. And this was like when I was first, you know, really getting fanish about it, even though I had watched it from the very beginning since it first came on. This is when I was first getting fanish about it, and I watched it all through again with her, and I kind of like increased my fanishness because I was experiencing it with her and she was, you know, doing it for the first time. And as we were doing that, we became like really, we got really, really into like Zuko and his attachment to the identity of the Blue Spirit and like how he sort of like separated off, you know, how he seemed to have this thing where he would sort of like separate off things that he would want to go be the Blue Spirit to do and things that, you know, he and we always sort of felt like a lot of times these were things that he felt were, you know, sort of beneath his dignity as a prince. So he would kind of separate this off.
Right. Like being a traitor to his nation by capturing Aang in the Blue Spirit, obviously, and stealing from people, and things that he's morally opposed to, but that he felt like he needed to do for his own reasons.
Like the conflict, it really crystallized that conflict between what he felt like he should be doing or what he wanted to do and what he, when like his thought about like what was expected of him.
Yes. And that identity crisis in Zuko's is just that constant identity crisis in Yoh. That's just like one of the most interesting things about his character. So I really love how so clearly compartmentalizing life in the headband.
Mm-hmm.
He one side now he has everything he ever wants. He should be, you know, perfectly happy. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna enjoy my life. But on the other side, feels horribly, and he's still completely worried about, you know, what's gonna happen. He knows the Avatar is still alive, and it's driving him crazy. He doesn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I just really loved how he did that. You know, how he's just kind of, he's crazy a little bit.
Yeah, if it wasn't for May, he would have completely gone insane. If he couldn't have little picnic breaks on Cliffside and little spouting emo love lines. And I mean, and what would he have done without her during that time?
And giggle snickering.
Giggle snickering, oh man.
Describe it.
It's one of the only times we've ever seen him laugh, period. Little boy, yes. It's like an adorable teenage kind of like way. Like, it was great.
It was awesome. I was just saying, like, yes, he was just, he lolled, basically.
He lolled.
He lolled.
He was like, oh my god, my girlfriend is so awesome. Holy shit. And then he was also thinking, I am totally going to get lucky, and then his sister showed up.
I know, cock-blocked.
Cock-block, yes.
And by the way, I love how that whole, like, obvious code thing that was going on between May and Azula, like, yeah, Tylee needs to help untangling her braids. Sure. Yes. That is something you
sounds
guys
sounds pretty serious. Away. Yeah, that sounds serious. She's gonna die of a tangle in her hair.
Zuko's like, wow, Tylee's braids are really irritating. Like, he has no idea.
He has no idea with the code. And, you know, and I love, and of course, again, more subtle May things. Okay, actually, it's not that subtle, because, you know, there's even, like, a ominous, like...
Like a
soundtrack. Like,
what is that noise? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Her bitch, one of these days, gives Azula.
It was the thin ice look.
It was.
Mm-hmm. Off to the side.
That's a lot of shit. I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you do not interrupt my makeup.
I think, how'd you put it one time, Rawls? Like, chafing under Azula's thumb?
Yeah.
That's a perfect way of putting it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, well, I think that for May, it that's something that took a long time to happen with her. I think because of her whole issues where... there's not that much that she cares about. And so she's kind of like, whatever, about most things. But when Azula starts bucking her with regard to things that she actually does care about, she starts to get a little bit upset.
Yeah. Of course, that's always the great thing about May and Zuko and like their whole need to sort of meet each other someplace in the middle, because Zuko cares about everything way too fucking much.
Yes.
Like, his problem is that he can't stop caring about every single fucking thing that ever happens to him way more than he necessarily needs to care about it.
Yes, and whereas May, of course, has the exact opposite problem that she decided, well, no, I'm not going to care about anything.
Yes, mm-hmm. Except her boyfriend, because he's...
Except her boyfriend. And yeah, I love that. And yeah, giggle snicker.
Oh, man. Those were good times. That never fails to make me laugh. Just at his expense. He's such a dweeb. He's such a dweeb, and she loves it so much. Like, he is so lucky that he found a hot girl who loves his dweebery.
Yeah, she's like into that. Yeah.
And she's like, I'm gonna change you, Zuko. I'm gonna heal the wounds inside of you. She's like, you have got to stop talking about the wounds inside of you.
Which is really what he needed, because he needed to figure out his own problems. He needed to solve himself.
She's like, step up. Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously, are you a girl? I'm not actually a lesbian. Like,
like, come on. She's like, there's that one time that Tylee taught me how to kiss, but other than that...
And that was hot and everything, but I would now like there to be a penis in this relationship, and it's not mine. although, speaking of relationships in the headband, I would like to point out that the headband introduced my perhaps number one ship of season 3, which is Sokka Beard.
Oh, yes. The introduction of Wang Fire.
And you think
that character just grows.
And you think, oh, haha, he has a beard. That's cute. Little do you realize that, like, oh, what is it, 3 times?
Yes, things? Multiple
mm-hmm.
times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you know, he just carries it around with him in his little green bag.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was that one time in a later episode where he turns around. He's like, you need a therapy session. And he just does a quick turn, and it's on his face. And it's like, you keep it out where you can whip it on.
He's been practicing.
Like, a second's notice, just in case there's a beard emergency of some kind. Like, seriously, if he could glue it permanently to his face, he would. He totally would. Quite rightly, because it's fantastic on him.
It is. It's the greatest. I have an icon of it, because that was just like the thing that I had to have an icon of.
Oh, speaking of icons, another great part of the headband, Noodle Ozai.
And see, of course, the people listening to this cannot know this, but
right now we are looking at Allie's icon of Noodle Ozai.
Yes, Noodle Ozai, which is the greatest.
That's one of my favorite Aang lines ever. And here's one I made out of noodles. And stuff like, impressive, I admit it. And it's like grudging acceptance of how awesome it is.
Greetings, my good Hotman.
Hi. I guess.
Speaking of Aang.
We ready to talk
about Aang?
We are so great with segues today, you guys.
We are. We're on.
We are so on. We, in our little section about getting into character, Aang happens to be the person we're supposed to be discussing.
That's right. Let the molding begin.
Guys, I love Aang.
He's my favorite always and forever, just to put that out there.
I love him so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will tell you the story of when I first started watching Avatar, which is when it first came on. And I am a very particular type of viewer of, you know, fiction or, you know, audience for fiction, in that almost always, for me to really get into a piece of fiction, there has to be a girl character with whom, for me to be like, I love this girl, and this is that. I often, actually, a friend of mine coined this usage, but as my own issue with this kind of increased, I had to use the term for it myself as well. I call it my fictional lesbianism. I am always all about the female characters.
Fictional characters you'd consider switching teams for?
Yeah, I have. That's a tag.
Yeah.
Whatever. The thing that was really unique about Avatar was that my sort of end for the show, that thing, you know, the one where I was like, oh my god, I love this character so much, was Aang.
Mm-hmm. And me too.
That doesn't happen that often with me. You know, there are a few exceptions where the character that I love the most will be a guy, but it's not really that often. And Aang was that one character. And I remember the moments that I just would overflow with love for him was, it wasn't just that I feel like Aang, he deals with things that would just completely destroy so many grown, strong, you know, just men and women, just people who have been through all kinds of stuff. The genocide of his entire race.
He literally takes a deep breath, thinks about it for a while, and moves on.
Yes, and he deals with these things with such grace, and he just has such strength.
Not that he's shallow either. It's not that he doesn't care.
It's not that he doesn't care.
Really deeply. One of the things I enjoyed about the Guru was that you really got a sense of like the depth of how Aang really feels this loss.
Mm-hmm. He carries it with him.
He just knows he can't do anything about it. He knows that there's no point having it run his entire life for him. Yes. So he's just sort of put it in a box and doesn't deal with it most of the time, which isn't entirely healthy. But honestly, what else is he going to do?
Well, yeah, what else?
Right.
There are some things you can't. There is nothing to do about that.
Right. He can't go back and save them. He has to focus on doing what he can now to make up for, you know, not being there for them to save them and not doing what he felt he needed to do and doing his job, basically.
And it's like, even with all of that, and I love all of that, and I especially love that Aang, though he has his moments where he sort of like feels the weight of the entire world on his shoulders, because it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
He has his sort of moments where he feels this, and you know, he is so refreshing to me because he is the chosen one who does not actually spend 90% of his time whining about how he's the chosen one.
He cares much more about getting into Katara's pants, right? I mean, in a very cute 12-year-old way, but still.
Yes, I love him, but you know, in all of these just wonderful traits that I love so much, the thing that ultimately just made me, just my heart just burst for Aang constantly, and I was like, I really love this show because I really love this main character, was how Aang is just so funny, and I once described him as one of the most genuinely charming characters that I had like ever seen. Like, a lot of times you have characters and they're supposed to be cute and charming, and you know, maybe sometimes. I find Aang so just genuinely completely charming, like, at all times. It's just kind of crazy. And I remember, like, the first moment I'm like, oh my god, I love him so much, is like way back in the first episode. Katara is like, are you going to teach me waterbending? And he's like, you know, I want to catch a penguin. And he falls down.
Priority.
And he gets back up and he like waddles around and makes like the penguin sound. And I'm like, oh my god, I love him.
Yeah, the penguin sound.
The
oh,
penguin
man.
Sound when he waddles around and makes a sound. And I'm just like, oh, my God. And then the other one thing that sticks in my mind so much is, like, I think it was in Jet. And Katara and Sokka are arguing about who should be the leader of the group. And Katara is, of course, fangirling Aang.
As always.
And, you know, and she's like, he's the Avatar. And Sokka's like, Aang, he's just a goofy kid. And then they just cut to Aang, and he's, like, hanging upside down off of Appa's horns. And he looks up, and it's for no apparent reason he's doing this. And he looks up and like, I sure am.
He's right, no, yeah.
I sure am.
The thing about Aang that it kills me is that he's so lighthearted that it's just in his nature to be lighthearted and genuinely caring of all creatures and people. And he's not afraid to act like a kid, you know, which he is, you know. But people take that as, you know, he doesn't want to accept his responsibility. He's still really immature. But really, if you look, speaking of episode one, if you look from the difference from episode one to episode 301, it's astounding. Like, he actually was running away from his responsibilities in the first episode, but the opening episode of season three, he's running away to run to his duties. You know, he feels like he needs to accept it so much that he needs to accept it alone. And it's just a really, I don't know if anybody else felt that that was a really meaningful parallel, but that always really struck me.
Well, I mean, the whole point of the show is that he, for Aang's personal, his growth as a character, is that he's moved from one extreme kind of all the way to the other one. And now finally, as the show is wrapping up, he's kind of finding that middle ground between completely abandoning his responsibility and feeling like he needs to carry all of it. Because that's not actually true. I mean, as obviously is kind of like part of the point of the show, is that Aang doesn't have to face the Fire Lord alone. Aang has his friends. Like, he has this huge group of people who care about him and who are going to help him. And he needs to accept that help and not, you know, have them take care of it for him, but not run away from them and screw things up by trying to do things that really he shouldn't be doing by himself anyway. And frankly, one of the problems that Roku caused was by trying to just be isolated in this artificial way. Like, he kind of abandoned his best friend. I mean, you know, Sozin, kind of an asshole, but seriously, Roku, like, just ditched him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he completely ditched him, and then he's like, oh, have a cookie. Sozin's like, I don't want a fucking cookie. I want to hang out with my best friend who mysteriously seems to care more about baked goods than about me now.
Right. And
Aang's whole arc is about how he's never going to do that. He's not the kind of person who's ever going to ditch his best friend. He's not going to ditch Katara and Sokka and Toph. He's not going to ditch his new fake older brother. Like, he's completely going to be there for all of them. And I think that part of what's going to be great for Zuko being part of this group of people in general, but Aang specifically, is having somebody in his life other than his uncle. And, you know, like, Iroh is, like, this whole other thing, because Iroh really is his dad, and, like, you kind of, your relationship with your parents is very different than your relationship with other people. And, but, you know, like, Aang has no reason to be nice to Zuko. Aang has no reason to care about him. He has no reason to give a shit about him at all. And yet he has been trying pretty much their entirety of their interaction to bridge this gap between them. And now Zuko's kind of letting him do it. And I'm sure it's kind of overwhelming for him to have, like, this kid who just obviously thinks he walks on water. It's actually one of the cutest things about the whole, about, like, it made me love Aang even more to watch his obvious weird fangirling of Zuko during Firebending Masters.
Sifu Hotman!
Sifu Hotman.
Oh my god, Sifu Hotman! The other most awesome thing about season 3.
Yes.
Sifu Hotman!
That's just epic. And I also... To go completely way off and talk about episode many ways down the line. I love you know, Zuko, you're so much smarter than everybody says you are.
I don't care what anyone else says, Zuko. You're pretty smart. And that look on Zuko's face.
He's like, please, and then he thinks about it. He's like,
wait a second.
Wait a minute.
Also, that was such a great Aang moment, because Aang means that sincerely.
Yes, he does. He's not.
He doesn't think about it as a backhanded compliment. It's just a compliment.
He's not making fun of anybody ever.
Right. I don't think Aang is a teasing kind of a person.
I think maybe a little bit, but
he's gotten in a couple burns. He's gotten in a couple burns, but not in, like, an intentionally mean-hearted way. Just, you know, when he's in a bad mood, and he'll say something, like, when Katara was trying to be funny, he's like, I guess sense of humor doesn't run in the family, or whatever he said. Ouch, Aang, but he didn't mean it that way.
No, I think the only time that he was actually ever really mean to somebody that I can remember, and Sokka was like, maybe you should kiss him about Jet, and he's like, I don't think that's right.
Oh, yeah. A bad one.
Yeah, Aang is like absolute lack of lol.
Thing. Yeah.
that was a rare moment.
He was like, yeah. You took it too far, Sokka.
Yeah. Shut up, Sokka.
Shut up. But yeah. Yeah, he's not mean often. Mm-hmm. I feel like he does. He gets in. Aang has jokes, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aang has jokes. Never at the expense of other people.
But yeah, not at the expense of other people. I remember I felt that Aang was particularly being pretty hilarious. And I think it was like the library. And I just kept remembering, like, I kept laughing at him, like, more than normal. Because he just kept saying, like, just funny shit. And I'm just like, oh, Aang, you're really saucy this episode, aren't you?
Yeah. You saucy little minx. Yeah. When he said, I try to die. Yeah. He's like, I try.
An exquisite, you know, example. Okay, I'll try.
there are just so many Aang, like, so many good Aang lines.
Yeah, he does.
Like, laughing at gravity. How adorable is he? How adorable is he?
Ever. Oh, man. That's like my favorite ever.
I laugh at gravity all the time. Gravity.
Gravity. Oh my god, lol. Like, he might as well have said lol. That
he might as well have, exactly. That was lol. The lol was gravity. Totally implied.
No, it was an implied lol. They probably said that during the writers' meeting.
Lol.
Lol gravity.
Oh, Aaron, he has. Anyway, I'm sorry, I said to slip that in there. It's not a conversation about Avatar with me unless I at some point mention my ridiculous love of Aaron Ehas. Oh, Aaron Ehas, my hero!
Who doesn't love him? Aaron has done
crazy
such amazingness
people.
With the show.
Only crazy.
Love Aaron are people who don't know who he is.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I feel. And
or haters. We don't like haters.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
So the other thing I have to say about Aang, by the way, is, and we all know this, but it has to be said, he has been disturbingly hot this season.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. I always kind of found him hot because apparently I'm kind of sick that way, but
no, but disturbingly, like Aang plus disturbingly. Uniform plus hair apparently equals hot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's a little more toned muscularly, you know?
Less
that scar on his back.
I remember that I was saying that, like, early season 3, and mm-hmm. I felt really, really vindicated because, like, I was thinking, oh my god, am I going crazy? And my brother, and, you know, he's an artist, he's like, no, I can see these small changes in Aang's character design, you know, da-da-da-da, and this is, I'm like, thank you, I didn't think I wasn't going crazy. Actually, that Aang was indeed hotter.
They intended him to be a little sexier, a little more pimping with the ladies.
Because he's smooth, you know?
Yeah, he is. Surprising amounts of smooth. Like in the headband. That line on Katara, that took me so by surprise. Like, don't worry about them. It's just you and me right now. And I was like, oh my god. Like, I blushed. I think I blushed for Katara when she was blushing.
She is his forever girl.
Oh.
Yes, she is.
Oh, I mean, because even if that didn't happen, he thought it.
Yes.
Like, the thing is,
you know, that's what
matter.
He thinks about her all the time. You know, he just looks at her and it's like, I want to be with her forever.
Ever and ever, and then we'll have babies. I mean, I'm sure he spent days and days and days wondering about whether they would have airbending babies or waterbending.
Yeah, he has. Because, I mean, it's basically canon that Serpent's Pass and, mm-hmm. oh, the baby. And
right.
It reminds me of you, Katara. All the babies.
That look he gives her, yeah, after Hope's born, he looks up at her, and that look in his eyes, it's totally like, that's going to be us someday. Search your heart, Katara. You know this to be true. But, yeah, like, I mean, that's really clear in the narrative that he wants to be with her forever. I mean, even before it's confirmed in 202 that he loves her, like, he actually loves her, like, mid-season 1, he's thinking about marrying her. Like, when he hears the fortune that he might be the one who marries her, he gets all excited, and he's like, things are going to turn out good. Yeah, so... Him and his heartings.
There's a lot in that tiny heart of his.
Mm-hmm. And he loves her with the love of his entire race that is gone. It's beautiful. It is a lot of love.
That's heavy. Man.
Although, mm-hmm. also backing up slightly to Aang and Zuko parallels, I think it's really interesting that you have these two characters. And it says so much about them. You have Aang, who has nothing. He doesn't have any family. His entire race, as far as he knows, is extinct, except for him. His home is crumbling. Like, all he has is his pet. That's all he has left of his entire culture.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, basically fine. Mm-hmm. And then you have
he's pretty
Zuko,
well adjusted, yeah.
And you have Zuko, who he's got his uncle who loves him. He's got a hot girlfriend. He's got, like, a sister who, while crazy, you know, not dead. And, you know, a father who, until recently, he seemed pretty okay with in his own unhealthy way. And, you know, his only problem is that his mom was dead. And now his mom isn't even dead. Zuko's still really not in a very good place. Like, I mean, it shows that, like, you know... you can blame your people have external problems and whatnot, but it really is just there's like this fundamental difference in these characters, yeah, how they deal with the rest of the world.
And yeah, how people deal with things is just how people deal with things differently.
And I don't agree with fandom thinking that Zuko is whiny. That's actually one of the most annoying things, I think, about all the stuff that people ever say about Zuko, is that he's like this whiny, self-indulgent brat, because I don't think that's true at all, but he certainly does have some issues that he is working on in his own time.
Yes.
He's actually so closed off that he whines a lot less than most of the Woobies do.
Yeah. In fact, Sokka whines more than Zuko.
Oh, Sokka whines constantly.
I mean, I love Sokka, but Sokka's always like, my dead girlfriend's the moon. Oh, meaning when I kiss somebody and the moon is out. It's
well,
like,
he's
oh,
the complaining
so
guy.
What?
He's the complaining guy. He has to be there to complain about things.
Sarcasm and also complaining guy.
That's
fine. Like,
and ideas occasionally.
Indeed.
Straight talking vegetarian guy? I forget.
Oh, the- Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, that's for next time when we discuss Sokka.
Oh, yes. Sokka.
Oh, that'll be cool. I'm just going to spend the entire time talking about his beard, but...
Yeah, oh, there's so much I want to say about Sokka, but we'll, yeah, I'll save it for next time.
So, are we done on the topic of Aang? I feel that I've expressed enough love.
Just once again, Aang, I love you so much. Yeah. Okay, I'm done.
People who don't love Aang scare me a little bit.
Yeah, how can you not?
You have no idea. This is so messed up.
Like,
he cannot be your favorite character. But if you don't like Aang, like, if there isn't a part of your heart that's like, aww, I'm a little worried.
Right.
A little worried.
It's like, those kind of people, I imagine them, like, seeing kittens or puppies and going like, ugh, so disgusting. Like, because that's what he is. He's like, a lot of times he's like a puppy. Like, he has that irresistible charm and adorkableness that like a puppy or a kitty has. He's Aang.
I need a volunteer from the audience.
Me.
I believe what we have now is recommendations.
Yes.
Oh, yay.
So, Raul, do you go on first?
I guess I can.
Cool.
Since you're gonna put me on the spot.
I'm sorry.
What I wanted to recommend this week is a fanfic, and it is called Unbolt the Dark, Three Games of Hide and Seek. And it was written by a friend of mine, Faye, and I am not recommending it because it was written by a friend of mine, because it is really, really good. It is a fic about May. And what I love about this fic is that it's just these three little instances in May's life, as implied by the three games of Hide and Seek, that just kind of really get into her head and show you sort of what you would imagine is going. Just May is, of course, a very internal character, much like her boyfriend. And so I love writing her personally, just because for some reason, like, her inner life is just so clear to me, like, at all times. I'm just always, like, thinking, I know this May is thinking at any given time. And what I love about this fic is that it is basically totally about her inner life and how she deals with all of these things, specifically Azula. And I really love that whole dynamic between those two, and, you know, how Azula might think that she has a little bit more May than she does, and May often thinks, yeah, one of these days, bitch, I'm going to cut you. That's why I really enjoy that fic. And it's not
I love
that long.
Fic too.
It's not that long, and it's just really great. And it has a little bit of Mexico in it, too. So it's good times. That is
it's
my
beautifully written. It's really gorgeous. Like, I remember reading it a while back, and it's like, everyone should read it. Everyone.
That is how she writes that way. We would always say, oh, Faye, always going around, doing everything in the universe better than everybody else.
Oh.
But yeah, and also of particular interest to me that she, of course, has promised me ridiculously long, like, Avatar post-canon fic once the show is over at some point in time. Because that is the thing that she also does. She will write ridiculously long fic. And it's awesome. And so, yeah. I look forward to that, but for right now, Unbolt the Dark.
Though, on a brief side note, I am actually really expecting there to be, like, a renaissance in fandom in terms of the kinds of people who are writing fic and the kinds of fic that people want to write once we have a closed canon. Because I think that this is a canon that will be a really good closed canon to fic or.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that a lot of them, not only because of the huge cast and, like, this incredibly rich world, but I feel like the way in which they're going to wrap stuff up will leave you being more interested in the characters and what's going on with them, not less.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's not, I mean, that's by no means a given, but
right. I mean, but they're obviously going to wrap up all the major storylines, probably even all the minor ones, and, you know, tie it up in a really neat bow and make it amazing. But there's definitely going to be things that still need to be explored, you know, beyond that, that can be explored, which is why everybody's looking forward to the possible spin-off series.
Well, I want to see, I mean, honestly, they have an entire planet to build.
Yeah, right. It's just a really good world.
I mean, like, mm-hmm. you know, just like you had the Civil War and then you had Reconstruction. And in some ways, Reconstruction is actually more interesting than the Civil War.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's actually one of my primary disappointments of the goddamn Harry Potter books, was the way in which she was determined to squash all such interesting follow-up to her book. Ooh,
that's a whole other topic.
I know. Oh, yeah. I get that in there.
Harry Potter grievances needs its whole other podcast. We might be able to look into that.
Specifically for that. Who's going to go next?
I can.
Go ahead.
Okay, so my rec this week is Brilliantly Green's live video channel. I've known her for so long. She's been making amazing fan videos forever. And there's so many that I just love, and that, like, she doesn't do a lot of really fancy effects, which I prefer, because, you know, it brings out what's actually there in the show. And she has so much insight, and she picks so many great songs. And some of her vids are more funny, and some of them are more, you know, somber. But more specifically, my two favorites of hers are, oh God.
I have her live video channel pulled up right now.
Yes. The one that she did for Across the Universe, the first one she did, yes. Strawberry Fields Forever.
Yes. I watched that. That was
fantastic.
Incredible. That was fantastic. I love it.
Yes. And it reminded me of one she did earlier, which was, oh my God, hang on.
I haven't even seen that one yet. Although it's interesting, because I'm actually right now, because I'm editing the video for the Comic-Con panel, and her cell block tango thing is one of the things that's
yes.
in there.
She
her safety dance.
She private messaged me and said that you had asked her if you could feature her at the panel at New York Comic Con, and she is so excited. She's Yay! So happy about it. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And I was wondering if it was because I had told you that I was going to wreck her.
No,
and
that's awesome.
I was hoping that you knew about her on your own, because everybody should. And I told her everybody needs to know about you, because you're so amazing.
Multiple people wrecked her to me. And
really?
So I ended up, yeah, and we're doing more kind of funny stuff. So I ended up, I'm taking part of Cell Block Tango, probably, although that might have get cut for time. But we're definitely using the theme from the headband thing with the safety dance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, awesome.
Yeah.
It's just a tight little, great little package. And that's, I mean, it's, there's something to be said for being able to do something in 20, that's 26 seconds long.
Right.
That's that funny.
Yeah.
She's incredible. And the one that Strawberry Fields Forever reminds me of kind of is her Aang tribute that she did forever ago, The Dream Within. And it didn't get a lot of attention. A lot of people didn't get it, but it's my favorite Aang tribute of all times. It's just, it's gorgeous. And it deals with the Avatar state and his visions. And just, it's, everybody, just go watch her. Go watch all of her vid, everyone. And
yes, ma'am.
Yeah, do it. Yeah. So
is that me?
Yes, you can go. Okay. First of all, sorry for not talking that much. Kind of shy. My recommendation is fan fiction called Dichotomy, and it's by The Rose's Charm, also known as Fanfare, on LiveJournal.
Mm-hmm.
And the summary says this: Suki's destiny-changing battle with Azula, Sokka and Loss, the meaning of project, and Azula's highly structured world. It's about division, contrast, and branching off into the unknown. It's an amazing, amazing fan fiction. It's a really long one, too. It's about 200, like, 1,000 words.
Wow.
Actually, 11 chapters, and it just got completed around the end of March. So if anyone ever has time to read it, it's awesome. But it starts off really lighthearted and filled with Sokka Suki fluff, which I love. And it parallels with Azula, obviously, and it has their trip home. It's an AU to season 3. And
oh, I love AU.
Yes,
oh,
I love AU. So amazing. But it like parallels between the two, and her Azula scares me. Seriously. She
more
writes
than canon
so
Azula?
Well. Yes, more than canon
wow.
Azula.
If you have any internal Azula, that'll make
yeah.
It's yeah, but she's so scary in this.
I'm
and
sure
it's like
the inside
oh
of her
God.
Head is really scary.
Oh man.
It really is. But this story is so deep. I actually cried a few times while reading it. Oh my God. And it's funny, and it's like adventurous, and it's like everything you could want in a fan fiction, as long as you like Suga and Mako and Katang, as all should. But yes, it's really my favorite fan fiction of all time on the internet.
Oh,
but yeah, awesome.
That is a glowing recommendation.
Yes, it is. I'm sure she'll be happy about that.
Please?
And Allie, that leaves
crap.
Look at you.
No, I have it. I actually do have a rec. I did my homework. I'm so good. I think I'm going to win the award for most obscure rec, though.
Well, that's fantastic. The more obscure, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, now I have to pull up the window again because I was unfortunately getting distracted. Okay, here we go. So my rec is for a fic that is so obscure that actually the title of the fic isn't even in the post that it was written by Lady Liss on LiveJournal. It's called A Long, Long Time Ago and was posted on Avatar Fic in October of 2006. And it is basically the story of a girl named Lou who is the next avatar in the cycle. And it posits a universe in which Aang died probably somewhere during season one or two, basically equivalent of the timeline. And so obviously the next avatar was born in the cycle. And this story is from the point of view of a very young girl named Lou, who's born, and she's a swamp bender, as opposed to being from the North or Southern Water Tribe. She's born in the swamp, and her people are wiped out by the Fire Nation, and she's taken to a prison camp, and she moves through the Earth Kingdom, and eventually ends up in New Ozai, and she gets adopted by a sort of pseudo-father figure in the form of Haru, which is interesting, who's older and has kids of his own at this point, although they have since died, because it's that kind of story. And I think what I really like about this fic is it's very thoughtful. Like, the Liss very clearly sat down and really thought about the implication, like pretty much all of the implications of decisions she had made. Like, she set up this universe. She's like, okay, this is a universe in which Aang has died and another avatar was born. And now she's, I think, 6 years old. What's happened in the last 6 years? What was her life like? How is she going to perceive the world given how she was brought up and the kind of life that she's lived? Of course, no, she has no idea that she's the avatar. Like, her, and I believe her father is Hugh, the vine bender, which I thought was also an interesting touch.
I don't know if he is. I know that he's the storyteller that, I don't know. I don't know if he's, maybe. Okay, anyway, I'm sorry.
I think that he's meant to be her father, though. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And so anyway, it's just really, it's hard to say anything. I mean, because so much of what makes the fic good is just sort of the way in which it's written and like the moments. It's basically a series of very short scenes and moments. But I think that of all the things that this fic does that are really interesting, the thing that I most liked is it really made me like Haru, who I really don't care about kind of at all. Mm-hmm. But she did a great job of portraying this guy who's probably at this point in his early 20s and has had a really hard life and has found this girl. And he, of course, realizes very quickly what she is. Like, his time with Aang has clearly given him sort of an insight that maybe not everybody else is paying attention in the way in which he is. And the fact that somebody could make me care about Haru from the point of view of a six-year-old is pretty impressive. So yeah, I mean, it's a fun fic. It's really interesting. It ends on a hopeful enough note that I didn't feel like I had been squished under the boot heel of Liss like I sometimes do with her fics. So yeah, I mean, I recommend taking a look at it just as sort of a artifact of a much older fandom. It still holds up. I mean, I was really surprised that when I pulled this up and read it again, and I hadn't read it probably in at least a year, I was surprised the degree to which it really holds up.
Yeah, it does. Like,
it works just as well now as it did at the time. So
right.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
And it is gorgeous. And like you said, like the hopeful ending that keeps you from being crushed, because I'm a crier. I'll admit I'm a crier, but I cried, and it was just her wording is really spectacular. She's just...
Well, she really gets inside the head of this character.
Yes. Yes. And there's like the innocence of the child and how naive she is because she doesn't have the tools that Aang has, you know, to know about what she needs to do and who she is. So it's really touching. It's beautiful.
Great. Those are our rec things. Cool. That you should go and check out.
You should totally go read them and review them.
Yes. Let them know that you love it because you will. Yes. So
that's always very important.
And we will have links to that on the page.
Yes. In our show notes for this episode. Mm-hmm. I believe all we have left at this point is Shizuma. I think you have a contest.
Yes, that hopefully people will want to participate in. It's a drabble contest. I'm thinking the due date should be April 11th, Friday after this coming Friday. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so Friday, April 11th is when it's due. Okay, the rules are 300 words or less, Meizuko related, obviously, nothing pornographic. But if you do want to write pornographic stuff, you can send it to us if you want. We can't, you know, we can't count it for the contest.
We'll enjoy that.
Feel free to send us porn, but we can't count it for the contest. So just to be clear about that, the winner get their submission read aloud on the podcast.
A dramatic reading
that we promised in our zero episode. So just send it in. If you don't want it read, but you still want to be considered for the contest, you know, you can say, I don't want it read aloud, but we'll still give you a lot of fishy love on the podcast and say how great it was. If there is enough submissions, then there might be honorable mentions as well. And perhaps little snippets of readings from others.
And also, as a note, everybody, you can send those into sickfishpodcast@gmail.com. That is also a link that will be in the show notes. So I think that's about it.
Great.
That's all we have for this week.
We're done?
We're done.
Oh my god.
Oh. Just a little over, yeah. Okay. Good time.
Wow. And I guess we will be back next week. We are going to be talking about The Painted Lady.
Yes.
And Sokka's Master.
And Sokka.
And Sokka, yeah.
Fittingly, because it's his main development episode.
Yes, very fittingly. That was organized that way very specifically. And, we're going to have some more recs, and that'll be awesome. That'll be great.
Yep.
Everybody say goodbye.
Okay, bye guys. Thanks for listening.